Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
But really, I think if you keep him in for longer than a couple of drives, then that's at the point where Kyle Shanahan feels like, okay, we need to get this offense clicking a little more, because right now, those first two drives, it didn't do it for me. So right now, I'm thinking that if they're able to limit it to just two for Jimmy Garoppolo and not risk injury with this interior line, because I think this interior line is going to get a lot of play coming up. Maybe not so much McGlinchey and Staley. That can be reserved for other tackle. Yeah. But Sean Coleman was out too.
Yeah.
So I think that right now, if you can keep it to just two drives at maximum for Jimmy Garoppolo in week two, let him go week three against the Chiefs.
Yeah.
You know, and let him play with the starters for a majority of the time like the rest of the NFL does. But in this second week, I don't care if he hasn't been there since week three against the Chiefs last season. I think if you need to limit him as much as possible, and I think that'd be a good thing, because that means that Kyle Shanahan's like, all right, I don't need to see any more. Let me see what Nick Mullins and C.J. Beathard got and let them battle it out.
Well, that's a really good point, because Mike McGlinchey and Joe Staley specifically, those guys are locked in. We know what those guys are, right? You don't really need to see them in the preseason. They're in that of that same nature. You know, you have kind of stalwarts each there on each tackle. So If we're gonna take that approach, then that means the 49ers are probably gonna run out Justin School, their sixth round draft pick from Vanderbilt, on one side, and then maybe Sam Young, the guy they signed off the street who was with the Miami Dolphins last year, on the other end. And then you're gonna put Jimmy Garoppolo underneath center behind Ben Garland, who's another guy that's who knows, you know, and whoever they run out there at guard in replacement for Mike Person, who's probably not gonna play. We're gonna find out that from Jin Lee Chan later on in the show today. But, you know, that's really, really scary. So if we're, you know, really thinking about this, what we want to see from Garoppolo tomorrow, I mean, I would set the over under of drives as maybe 1-2, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, with just who they're protecting him with him.
One and a half.
And you'd almost probably take the under there.
Right. Yeah. And I think that if you keep him to that point, then that's gonna be just that's when you know Kyle Shanahan's like, okay, all right, I've seen enough. I don't need to see any more. Let Nick Mullins and C.J. Beathard in, which is leading me to my next question here. And I want to ask Jeff Kerr about this coming up here on the Dialpad guest line at 4:15. But do you think there's any chance that instead of putting, maybe depending on who wins the QB battle, it's looking more like it's just going to be Nick Mullins, seeing as to what he did last season and seeing what he's doing now in preseason. He's good in Shanahan's offense and mainly running the play action. That dude knows
his
how to do
that. His play fakes, it's Peyton Manning-esque,
right?
Which is crazy to say.
And that's why George Kittle was able to have so much success, is because Kittle was just always open on every single play fake when the teams thought they were going to run first. But we could just make the hypothetical, whether it's Nick Mullins or C.J. Beathard, but could they trade away either one of those guys for maybe an offensive lineman just for depth there?
Maybe. How I feel about this, and this has been, you know, one of the hot topics of the 49ers, who's going to be quarterback two? Kyle Shanahan talked about it in, you know, after the game last Saturday, where he said, you know, CJ is going to go out first in front of Nick. You know, Jimmy's going to play, and then CJ is going to be the guy that comes in and backs him up. We're each going to give these guys a shot to kind of show what they can do. CJ's been dealing with a thumb injury. Maybe that's changed. We'll find that out later in the show. But, I mean, I don't see a situation where they trade or get rid of C.J. Beathard. I think that he's almost locked to be on the team.
Really?
Just because Kyle Shanahan has a thing for him. It's clear that from a lot of people that Nick Mullins is probably the better quarterback. He got the action. He got it done last year during the season. He looked better. I didn't really learn too much in that first preseason game between them. They both kind of like matched each other out. They didn't look like different guys. There wasn't much improvement from last season from either CJ or Nick Mullins in the first preseason game. Nick Mullins, in my opinion, has looked better in training camp, but CJ's also had some nice throws too. There's a reason they traded up and drafted him, right? I think there's more of a situation where we could see Nick Mullins potentially getting traded. If there's actually interest in him, which it sounds like there may be, we're seeing backup quarterbacks drop out like flies. You know, Josh McCown was just signed off the street. You were talking earlier about Dan Orlovsky, you know, which is a great yeah. point, you know. So obviously there's probably a need for Nick Mullins, where I think you could probably trade him easier because of what he's done, and you're just comfortable with CJ Beathard being the backup.
I think you're gonna need to trade. I don't know who it's gonna be, but you need to trade somebody to get some sort of depth on the offensive
line.
Well,
are you comfortable with CJ Beathard being Jimmy Garoppolo's backup, knowing what we know about Jimmy and his injuries, all that stuff we just talked about the offensive line? Like, are you comfortable with CJ being the number two quarterback, or does it make any difference to you having Nick Mullins there?
I would be comfortable with that, because I think that initially, you know, it seems like CJ Beathard, just with how young this team is, that he's this seasoned veteran who's been around forever, when in reality he's just 25 years old and he was drafted in the third round. Like, you could say, I think there's some people out there who are saying there's some more upside with CJ Beathard or more upside with Nick Mullins rather than CJ Beathard, just because Nick Mullins is younger, but CJ Beathard in relative terms is still pretty young too. I'd be comfortable with either one, just because I've seen what Nick Mullins can do and how he thrives in Kyle Shanahan's offense. I don't know if he necessarily would with another guy who's an offensive minded coach. So, but I really would be comfortable with either one. But I also think there's some pretty valuable trade pieces here. There's some pretty valuable trade
pieces. Yeah, and that's going to be something interesting to talk about Jeff Kerr with when we get back here. And I'm interested to see what he says, because nationally, we pay attention to this so closely here in the Bay Area, these two guys.
Right.
But talking to a national guy, he could be like, CJ who? Kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know? So it's going to be interesting to talk to him when we get back.
Jeff Kerr, he is an NFL writer for CBS Sports. He'll be joining us on the Dial Pad guest line next. Stephen Langford, Tommy Call in with you on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Stephen Langford, Tommy Call in with you here on 95.7 The Game. We'll be with you up until 6 o'clock, and we'll throw it over to Fox Sports. But right now we go to the Dialpad guest line as NFL writer for CBS Sports, Jeff Kerr, joins us. You can follow him on Twitter at Jeff Kerr CBS. How you doing, Jeff?
Hey, pretty good. How's it going?
Yeah, it's going all right. So, really, the first question we need to ask: we just saw the update about an hour ago that Mike Mayock right now says Antonio Brown needs to be all in or all out. What do you make of this Antonio Brown helmet love story that's going on?
I'll tell you what. This is a soap opera. It really is. I mean, I think CBS needs to cancel The Young and the Restless and bring this Antonio Brown helmet saga. You know, I think they can get a good 2-week story out of this. It's incredible what he's going through. Will he or won't he play with this helmet? And I don't blame Mayock for giving him the ultimatum right now. You know, you either put up or shut up. But, you know, find a helmet. Do you really have to go on Twitter and ask for somebody's helmet? How hard is it to find a helmet? Look, I understand that the old helmet works for him. When I played football, I used an older version of a helmet, but there were no rules and regulations against that. For Brown, it's a little different, and I get it's uncomfortable. I get he doesn't like it, but he has to find one. He has to get in camp, and right now, it just seems like he's eating his guaranteed money. I mean, Pittsburgh is literally paying $21 million in cap space to keep him off their roster, and so far, that $21 million is looking pretty good right now.
I want to know, Jeff, like, what do you think that happens here? Is he playing week one? What's the worst case scenario? He sits out the season? I mean, this is kind of uncharted grounds, right? And can you, like, could you see a situation where AB does not suit up in silver and black?
You know what? I actually think he is going to suit up. He just reminds me of one of those guys who just seeks attention. And he wants to get attention any way he can. And you really can't get attention in the preseason because, I mean, let's face it, he's a star. He doesn't need to play in the preseason. I don't care if he doesn't know the offense from Adam Reed. He's a star. He doesn't need to play any of these preseason games. He can show up week one and he'll be fine. I don't think he's going to have like the numbers he had at Pittsburgh per se, but I still think he's going to make an impact for the Raiders. I think this whole helmet thing is going to blow over at some point. I don't think he's actually threatening to retire or do all that stuff he says he's going to do. I actually think we will see in week one. Now, if he shows up and plays bad, then Raiders fans have every right to get on him for the drama that he's been creating for them. But, yeah, I actually think he's going to show up and play week one.
Jeff, do you, speaking of preseason, what's your, like, expectations of Jimmy Garoppolo tomorrow night? All signs point that he's going to play, maybe a drive or two. We don't really know. Are you going to be looking for anything specific tomorrow night against Denver with him?
You know, fortunately, I'm from the Philadelphia area, and I got to watch Carson Wentz's ACL recovery in person. And to me, I'm looking for mobility in that knee. You know, Jimmy G doesn't rely on his mobility like Wentz does, but at the same time, you're still going to have to plant that knee. And I think that's what I want to see out of Garoppolo. Now, Carson Wentz kind of made up for it last year. I mean, his completion percentage was 69%. So, but again, he couldn't extend the play like he did in that MVP-type 2017 season. But what I want to see out of Garoppolo is being able to plant that knee and just have confidence throwing the football. His arm strength should be fine, but I want to see what happens when a defender chases him, too. You know, what's he going to do? Is he going to get rid of the ball quick, like kind of like how Wentz did last year, and go find a George Kittle or, you know, a tight end like that? Or is he just going to try to make a play with his legs? Because early in the season, in September and October, Wentz tried to do that, and then he overcompensated and he hurt his back. That's what I want to see what Garoppolo does, even if he's only in for, what, maybe 5 to 10 plays, just to see what happens when someone pressures him. What's he going to do?
Jeff Kerr is an NFL writer for CBS Sports, and he's joining us here on the Dialpad guest line. Do you put any stock into Jimmy Garoppolo throwing those 5 straight interceptions in practice on Wednesday?
Practice is practice.
Right.
That's really all I have to say about it.
So going forward, though, do you think that, I mean, if for me, you said that Jimmy Garoppolo playing only 5 to 10 plays is what you expect from him. I mean, if they keep him in any longer, do you think that's just going to be a case of Kyle Shanahan just wants him to get that work in, or Kyle Shanahan actually needs to see more, and that's actually kind of a negative thing that we'd see him play more in this Week 2 preseason game?
Yeah, well, when do the 49ers play Week 3 of their preseason? They play Saturday, or do they have a short week?
I got to look that up. They do play the Chiefs.
I think it's Saturday.
Okay, so they're going from Monday to Saturday. I am more convinced to see what he does on Saturday, because I think he's going to play Week 3 of the preseason and play those extended snaps. I mean, Jimmy G is still a young quarterback, and I know we're kind of facing this debate over with the younger guys now, you know, the Carson Wentzes and the Dak Prescott, and you can count Jimmy G in this mix. Do they really need to play in the preseason? The difference is those two are healthy. I wouldn't like Jimmy G coming out in week one and just untested on that ACL. I think tomorrow night would be great to get his feet wet, and then week three, maybe you give him a quarter and a half, whatever Shanahan likes to play them, and then you could see if he's ready for the year. I mean, the beauty of his injury was it was early last year. It wasn't in November or December, so he's not rushing back. He's more closer to 100% than, you know, say Carson Wentz was last year coming off the ACL injury. So I think that's going to help Garoppolo as the season goes on, but especially playing these preseason games. But yeah, I won't put too much stock into tomorrow night. I probably would see a little bit more what he does in week three on Saturday.
So, Jeff, I want to know, what you think of the new pass interference rule, the challenging, and just how officiating has been in the preseason overall. I mean, it's frustrating to watch sometimes, and I think it's one of the bigger things the NFL has going, you know, against them, that I don't know what the solution is. Are we going to see this all through the regular season? Is this going to be a continuing problem, or will it fade off a little bit as, you know, real football begins?
Yeah, you know what? I really can't provide a solution to it. I mean, I've always tried to figure out, okay, what are they going to do? Is it great they're reviewing penalties? Yeah, I guess, but we already know the officials are under the microscope of replay anyway. So what's going to happen when they get a call wrong, they review it, and they still get it wrong, as we saw in that Redskins game the other night? I mean, I think it's just making them look worse. I just think right now the speed of the game is so quick for these officials that they're not going to get every call. And unfortunately, you're not going to see a perfect game. You know, the motto they told us when we were kids, life's not fair. That's kind of how I feel this officiating situation is. You're not going to get every call ruled in in your favor, whether you review it or not. I think this pass interference review is here to stay, unfortunately. I mean, it doesn't mean I like it. I don't think a lot of media members like it. But, again, it's, you know, what are you going to do? I can't find a better solution for him. Are we going to get robot officials? I don't think we're at that stage yet. You know, are we going to let the players dictate the game? No. I mean, they already made it an offensive game as it is. So I guess this is the way to counteract that.
Jeff Kerr, he's an NFL writer for CBS Sports, and he's joining us on the Dialpad guest line. Just one more for you, Jeff. How do you see the NFC West shaking down? I thought a lot of analysts out there, they wanted to have that take that the Cardinals could surprise some people. And then in week two against the Raiders, you saw Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray. They just didn't exactly look like they're on the same page. But how do you see the NFC West shaking down this year?
Well, I don't think the Cardinals are going to win it. I mean, if I'm wrong, you guys can call me and say, hey, Jeff, you were wrong. And I'll gladly admit it. But from what I saw for two preseason games from the Cardinals, Cliff Kingsbury looks overmatched against any team that blitzes him. At least that's what the Raiders did. And the Cardinals can't get the ball past midfield. That doesn't mean Kyler Murray's not going to be a good quarterback. But I don't know. I just don't see it. I think the 49ers could be the surprise team, quite honestly. I mean, to me, they're the wild card in all this. I think Seattle's going to be Seattle. They still have Russell Wilson. They still have a good defense. They keep losing players. I think their offensive line is going to be a little bit better. But, again, I wouldn't be surprised if Seattle went, you know, 8-8, 9-7 again. I think the Rams are obviously the favorites in that division. But we'll see what happens in Jared Goff's contract year. And, I mean, even with Todd Gurley being out, it looks like the Rams really shaped themselves out with their backfield there. It looks like they prepared if Todd Gurley's going to be out again. And they still have weapons. And, of course, you know, when you have a defensive line with Aaron Donald on it, you know, need I say more? But the 49ers are the most intriguing team to me because they do have a nice young core there. And I'm really curious to see what the 49ers do at running back. You know, I know Jerick McKinnon had that setback, but you still got guys like Matt Breida. I mean, Raheem Mostert could make a run there. I don't know how he's doing this preseason. I guess we'll see him tomorrow. That'd be a guy I like to see. And, of course, they got Tevin Coleman, too. So, I think the 49ers are – their season comes down to how Jimmy G responds from that ACL injury. And he's going to be, what, 11 months removed come September 8th? Is that correct?
Just about, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess their season comes down to him. And I know you guys are probably still excited from the last five games of 2017. So I like to see what happens with the 49ers, with Kyle Shanahan having that full arsenal. I think they could surprise some people, but I'm not ready to, you know, give them the NFC West title yet, but, I mean, they could give the Rams a run for their money. You know, I'm not going to debate that, especially if, you know, Garoppolo's healthy.
That voice you hear is Jeff Kerr. He's an NFL writer for CBS Sports. Follow him on Twitter, at Jeff Kerr CBS. Thank you for joining us today, Jeff.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right. Have a good one. Tommy, I'm glad that he brought up one. Well, I mean, the 49ers could be the surprise. I think he echoed that sentiment among a lot of analysts, yeah. A lot of guys, a lot of writers. But he brought up the running back position, right? Mm. And now we're talking about questions for Dante Pettis being that number one wide receiver. But there's also questions for who's going to be that number one running back going into the season. And do you think we could go into this year just really not having a clear-cut number one at both running back and wide receiver?
I do. I think that's just the way the NFL is now. You know, we talk about positionless basketball. It's not the same as football, but, you know, you don't need what Jerry Jones said it, right? You don't need a number one rusher to win the Super Bowl. But honestly, I think that is a foregone conclusion that Tevin Coleman is the guy in San Francisco. I mean, he gets a tons of reps in practice. There's definitely have a plan for him. He looks incredibly fast. He catches the ball very well. This is another Kyle Shanahan guy he went out and got. Jerick McKinnon, we have no idea what's going to happen there. Absolutely no idea. Where Matt Breida, I think he's good, but not great. Perfect as the number two guy, though. I mean, that's a guy. I mean, they don't have that big banger goal line type of back, but
right.
Again, that's something, you know, that's why you have Kyle Juszczyk if you really want to run plays up the middle of the field like that.
True.
But I think Tevin Coleman is kind of a great, you know, I don't want to say a perfect back for Kyle Shanahan's system, but a pretty darn good one. And there's no doubt in my head that they have a serious plan for the guy. And I firmly believe he is the number one running back in San Francisco.
So Tevin Coleman's going to be that number one dude, because it's interesting seeing it from last season with Tevin Coleman. He had over 1,000 all-purpose yards, mm-hmm. and so did Matt Breida.
Yeah.
And Matt Breida, like, that dude, when he gets out into space, he makes defenders miss. Like, if you get him in open field, you got confidence in what he's going to do. But I'm curious to see if there could possibly the balance between those two, because they're pretty similar running backs.
They are, yeah.
I mean, if you do bring Jerick McKinnon in, I don't know what's going to happen with
him. I don't know. It's sad. It's a bummer that situation, that this is going on. You almost feel for the guy. It's hard to criticize what he's going through, because we have no idea. And it would be great to see him out there as a good comeback story type of thing. And I think he definitely provides a little bit of, you know, juice to this 49ers offense. And, you know, think about a year ago, Kyle Shanahan said it in practice, Jerick's first day back out on the field, that they had a massive plan for this guy in this offense, Jerick McKinnon specifically. That's why they brought Tevin Coleman in, obviously. So he's going to take a chunk of that. But there's no doubt that Kyle Shanahan specifically is itching to get number 28 on the field for them. And it just hasn't happened yet. And at this point, I mean, it seems more likely than not that he is going to be on the field, right? I mean, he looks like, will he ever play a snap for the 49ers? We really don't know. I mean, he could be a guy that's, you know, a designated IR, going to miss the first, 6 weeks, I think is what it is. We could maybe see him down the stretch of the season. But what we saw last year with Matt Breida, specifically Raheem Mostert, when he got carries, Kyle Shanahan likes playing the hot hand. That's a big thing in the NFL with running backs specifically. So where does he fill out in the depth chart if Tevin Coleman's knocking on 1,000 all-purpose yards and he is the guy in San Francisco? You know, I don't see Jerick McKinnon breaking into that lineup week 8, 10, making a massive difference. Maybe, but that's not something we can count on from what we've seen so far.
What'd you see from them overall in training camp when you were there? By the way, Stephen Langford, Tommy Collin with you, in case you're wondering whose voices you're hearing now.
We're doing it, people.
On your radio. But Tommy spent a lot of time in training camp, as a matter of fact, every single day. Mm. And so I want to know, though, what was your takeaway overall just on Tevin Coleman in general? Because we know what we're getting with Breida, with Mostert, and even with Jeff Wilson. We know that guy's a banger. He'll go in.
Yeah.
He could be even that guy that goes up the inside. I mean,
for sure.
But, I mean, he's still, you can't really put much stock into it. Because he's not exactly.
Well, I think Jeff Wilson's actually injured right now. He's actually not on.
Is he really?
Yeah, I'm almost positive. If Jeff Wilson's not on the field for them, but it's a lot of Tevin Coleman and Matt Breida. A lot of it. Raheem Mostert's obviously there doing his thing too, but he got banged up in the first preseason game. So what they're running out, the kid from Tulsa or whatever, the little tiny guy, number 33, Andrew Walter. Austin Walter, excuse me. That's his name.
Andrew but Walter, yeah. I was going to say, is a different dude.
Yeah, Austin Walter.
Very different dude.
But even him, he showed flashes. I think all running backs are going to look good in Kyle Shanahan's offense. I think that just is what it is. Everywhere he's gone, they've had good rushers. Look what he did with Matt Breida last year. Look what, you know, Mostert did as the lead guy there, tore it up, you know. And now you put a guy like Tevin Coleman, who's never really had the chance to be the guy. Last year when Devontae Freeman went down, we got to see spurts of that in Atlanta. But now, you know, I think he is the number one back, almost undisputed, with, you know, definitely Matt Breida is going to eat into some of his carries. They have a plan, I'm sure, for Matt Breida. But if you're going to, you know, have a guy get 20 touches a game, it's going to be Tevin Coleman. One thing I really haven't seen is Tevin Coleman line up, you know, maybe as a slot receiver or something like that. And he has the versatility to do that. And we talked about that a lot when they originally signed him, right? That this guy can really catch the football. If they have this three-headed monster of a backfield with Jerick McKinnon and Matt Breida, you're going to see Tevin Coleman out there in the slot here and there, you know, being used as an actual wide receiver. I haven't seen a ton of that yet, but again, why would they show that in the preseason or even to us in training camp if that's going to be a real gadget style play for them? So I'm actually interested to see that. I hope they do. I hope we do see that, because you put Tevin Coleman on a linebacker, that's not an easy cover. That's not an easy cover. That's a tough situation. And what we know about, you know, offensive football in the NFL nowadays, mismatches are key.
Right.
You know, huge thing for the offense. Kyle Shanahan hasn't had the playmakers to really be able to do that outside of George Kittle, right? None of these guys have been that kind of, you know, unique weapon where Tevin Coleman kind of fills that shoe a little bit. So we're going to have to see it when the regular season starts.
I mean, the NFL right now is trending in that weird direction where it's no longer, hey, we got to run the ball in order to pass effectively. Right now, it's kind of switched around. It's you got to pass the ball right now in order to establish the run, just because you're getting more positive plays statistically. Just you're more likely, instead of giving it off to a running back, let him run a couple of yards. You're more likely, at least just to you're least likely at least to get a turnover if you're just passing the ball. So I'm actually curious to see what they're going to do, because you're talking about the slot receiver. They could put anyone in that slot receiver.
Yeah, and I think maybe if they didn't go out and draft Jalen Hurd and Debo Samuel, and we haven't even talked about the 49ers receivers yet, which is probably the toughest position battle in training camp, would you say, so far? I mean, that's what you're wanting to see, one of these guys step up, right?
Right. I mean, those are all eyes are on them right now, even though they're super young. One I haven't heard of, though, or heard from, which might be a good thing, is Marquise Goodwin. Mm. You know, you got Kyle Shanahan. He had nothing but good things to say about Marquise Goodwin, but all the talk's been about Dante Pettis. Is he going to show up as that reliable, quote-unquote, veteran receiver, even though he's only in his second year? What are Debo Samuel and Jalen Hurd going to bring to the table? Marquise Goodwin is kind of, I mean, you're right. The battle for sure is probably the biggest one they got going in camp right now, as well as really, I mean, I also think that secondary is kind of in question after Sherman and Verrett. I think that's an interesting one.
We're not going to see Verrett till who knows. Yeah.
They say he could be back week one. There's reports out there he could be back week one. We'll be asking Jennifer Lee Chan about that coming up here.
Updates on some guys.
At 5:15. Real quick, Jennifer Lee Chan actually will be joining us on the Dialpad guest line. And you got to remember, people, that Dialpad helps you make smarter calls. Connect your team with a business communication platform that powers voice, video, messages, and meetings across your existing devices. But I'm curious.
Let's go. That was beautiful, by the way.
Was it?
Yeah, it was beautiful.
I mean, I gave it a shot.
Yeah.
Gave it a shot and I ran.
You killed that, man. I got goosebumps.
Yeah. But Marquise Goodwin, though, it's just, I feel like you haven't heard much out of him, and I think that's a good thing coming out of training camp. You don't really want to hear, you can hear, they played well.
He's
blah,
in the
blah,
best
blah.
Shape of his life.
You can hear all of that, but you haven't heard anything negative coming out of Marquise Goodwin's camp.
True, but it's weird because I feel like a lot of, you know, I go back and forth with some of my followers on Twitter about Marquise Goodwin a lot. He's kind of a polarizing player, I think, for the 49ers specifically, because if you were to put it on paper, you'd probably slide him into that number one wide receiver slot. But I don't think anybody across the league considers him a number one wide receiver, if that makes sense. But interesting, we haven't seen a ton from Marquise Goodwin, and that's led people, you know, in training camp, it has been a little quiet. But that's led people to bring up, like, are they going to trade him? Are they going to cut him? I think absolutely no way. He held him out of the first game for a reason. He is their number one wide receiver for that team. And then you look at we were talking about this before the show. Benjamin Albright, radio host and writer out in Denver, incredible follow if you don't follow him. He was tweeting about some 49ers stuff because he was at the Denver practices, and he tweeted out that Marquise Goodwin is like the undisputed best 49ers receiver on the field the whole week in Denver that they practice. We're obviously going to get to see a little bit more of that. Love to ask, you know, Jennifer, when we talked to her about that. I just think he's firmly on this team. There's no way he's making it. And that makes, you know, this situation and Trent Taylor, who's injured, I think he's firmly on the team. And then you talk about guys like Pettis, Debo Samuel, and Jalen Hurd. Those three guys are locks to make the team. They're recent draft picks. So that's what, five guys right there as wide receivers. How does it shake out for Richie James, Kendrick Bourne, Jordan Matthews? I mean, how many receivers is this team going to really keep? And where do they all slot in? I mean, I've even liked what I've seen from guys like Malik Henry and Poindexter, the 6'5 receiver that they have out there that wears number one. I mean, these guys aren't horrible players, but at the same time, I don't think they're going to make the team with this wide receiver. But it's weird because we talk about how tough of a battle it's going to be when they're still, you don't look at any of those guys as go, they're in the number one wide receiver. Yeah, we talked about Debo being a playmaker. We talked about the craftiness of Dante Pettis. But does any of those guys really give you confidence for the 49ers receiving core?
I think for Dante Pettis, what we've heard so much is just how talented he is, how well he can get in and out of breaks, how well he could shake up cornerbacks. But also, when you got that talent, you also got to execute that talent and actually make sure you catch the football.
Yeah.
Which really, from camp, you're seeing stuff like, Dante Pettis drops the football. Yeah. Dante Pettis drops the football. But I think, I'm wondering, though, with Marquise Goodwin. Kind of want to stick with him.
Yeah, if he's able, I have another question for you about him too.
If he's able to stay fully healthy this season and go all 16 games because he couldn't last season, I mean, could he be a 1,000-yard guy?
I don't think
so. Or is
that
just way too much of a ceiling to put there?
I think a little bit of a high ceiling.
Way too
and
much, yeah.
What's really interesting about Marquise Goodwin specifically is so he's incredibly fast. There's no doubt about it, right? Think about all the really fast receivers that they're on the NFL. Tyreek Hill screams out. Mecole Hardman, another guy in Kansas City. I'm sure there's guys we're missing already, but
everyone on Kansas City's fast.
Yeah,
every
true.
Single person.
True, and you look across. Like, I mean, I think of guys like Jakeem Grant for the Miami Dolphins, another incredible fast player. All these guys across the league, right? Marquise Goodwin isn't used like those guys, right? Where they're handing them the football, they're throwing him schemes, they're trying to get his speed and space. He's kind of just a deep threat. Kenny Stills, another Dolphins player, another deep threat guy. What I was thinking about is that he's like Kenny Stills isn't utilized as a weapon, right? It's just a deep threat. Is there room in the NFL still to this day for that? Like, does that kind of...
Absolutely, man.
You think so?
Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely room for that if you could find it. But also, you do want... I mean, you're seeing...
You want to see handoffs. You want to see all these... Like, look what Tyreek Hill does, right? And Marquise Goodwin's always going to be compared to him because they're both these incredibly fast guys, similar body types in creative offenses. But we just don't see that from Marquise Goodwin. We didn't see it last year. Barely saw it the year before.
You know, that's the thing is you got to at least show there's at least a little bit of versatility with him, and whether it's doing, you know, the end arounds or just having him motion and then just real quick, kind of like Tom Brady does, just flick it out.
Boom.
Just flick right it out
football.
To him
yeah.
right in front of him. And then, you know, but Deebo Samuel can also be that guy too, though.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm curious to watch because it feels like they kind of have similar builds. You see with Deebo Samuel, he was a deep threat in the week one where he went up and just grabbed the ball over the defender, which is something that I think, as far as I'm concerned, I put way more stock into that than Jalen Hurts' 2 touchdowns that he got earlier just because of the difficulty of that catch. But, I mean, it is going to be on Kyle Shanahan this year to really show Marquise Goodwin versatility because he can do that. Any deep threat can be that guy that does an end-around sweep. It's just a question of whether you actually practice it. And speaking of which, though, he was just 1,000 yards, all-purpose yards in 2017.
Yeah, final season with Jimmy, right?
And he actually played in all 16 games. So that's going to be one. Not only is Dante Pettis the connection between him and Jimmy G, which we want to see, but also with Marquise Goodwin as well. Coming up at 5:15, we'll go to the Dialpad guest line for Jennifer Lee Chan, who covers the 49ers.
We're steaming through this thing, man.
We are.
Feels like we just started.
This has been the quickest.
Have we given our introductions yet?
Who are you
again?
Yeah, I haven't met you really before. We're an hour and 42 minutes in, and this is the quickest hour and 42 minutes of my life, except for that time I watched The Informant a couple of nights ago. Really good movie with Matt Damon. Recommend you all check it out. Chilton Autobody text line 95795 if you want to get in on the conversation. 888-957-9570. Going forward, Tommy and I are going to continue to discuss the 49ers, what we expect. Because
football
season, it's coming up. We also got some we know that, hey, we don't care about your fantasy football team is the type of thing. We're not going to go. We haven't drafted yet, but we do want to talk about fantasy football because we do enjoy it. It's a thing millennials love.
Yeah. Well, we're in the same league together, Steven. We have been for a few years, I feel like. And so I don't want to reveal any true secrets with you, but it's exciting.
I'm going to get them out of you.
Let's go.
I'm going to get them out of you. Steven Langford, Tommy Call, in with you on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Woo! Steven Langford, Tommy Call with you. And just to give you a little background, we got a guy on the board here in Wes. You might know him as Worldwide Wes or one of the coolest people of all time, but he's just been coming in with some fire music, and we've been working with him
forever. The only way to do it.
And he cannot stop laughing right now. Oh, man.
My very first time ever on the airwaves, this is the song Wes played for me when I came back.
Touched by an Angel?
Yeah, Charlie Wilson. And then we just rolled with it ever since
stuff.
Now.
It's good stuff. Not to be confused with Tom Hanks, Charlie Wilson, and Charlie Wilson's War in that one movie that no one really watched.
Great reference.
Jennifer Lee Chan from NBC Sports Bay Area. She's going to be joining us coming up here. Was going to join us at 5:15, but will be pushed up. So we're going to wait to get on the line with Jennifer Lee Chan from NBC Sports Bay Area. But from the 510 on the Chilton on Everybody text line, Steven, you suck, bro. Everyone else talks about their high school and you never rep Irvington. I mean, sorry that I haven't rep my Viking.
Rep your high school. Man, I haven't rep
my Viking pride on there yet.
My high school is the Vikings as well.
Really?
Yeah, shout out to Montgomery High School.
Montgomery High School?
Yeah, Montgomery High School Vikings, baby.
Where at?
Santa Rosa. Santa Rosa, California, the 707.
You know, I've known you for a while, and I've never really asked you about high school. I've never really felt the need to flex my high school chops. Mm-hmm. And then also, he says you never even played sports. Wrong.
Wow.
Wrong, bro.
We got an athlete in here on our hands, people.
Look, I'm a low-key athlete, bro. I'm a low-key athlete. Low-key. But you, yesterday, I saw something. Didn't you play in a cornhole tournament or something?
I did. I played in a cornhole tournament. For those of you who don't know, I take my cornhole pretty seriously. I've played in quite a few tournaments.
Yeah.
All over the place now. Got my own custom bags. We got boards set up. We have... between my house and my family's house, my girlfriend's family's house, we have like 6 sets of boards.
Wow.
Take it pretty seriously. Yeah, I actually played against the guys who were on ESPN at one point.
Really?
Yeah, I swear to you. Yeah.
And Wes is talking in our ear.
Yeah. Well, no, he was asking if it should be an Olympic sport.
Should it be an Olympic sport? I'm watching these dudes on ESPN.
Yeah.
I'm thinking it should be.
It's pretty electric. What's funny is everybody kind of clowns. I mean, I'm not seriously defending cornhole. What happened was I would play at tailgating. I used to be a season ticket holder of the Oakland A's, and my girlfriend got me a set of boards to throw in the truck to go.
Yeah.
And we did that, and we started playing more serious, and just kind of getting into it, and then started playing in some tournaments, meeting people who had all this equipment and all these things for playing cornhole, as silly as it is.
Yeah.
And so we played in a tournament yesterday, like 80 people out there. We came in third.
Really?
Yeah, should have won it all, honestly.
So wait, you actually had 40 teams in this tournament?
No, it was
just 80
it was 20.
People in general.
Yeah, I think it was 20 teams,
okay.
Or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's your strategy here? Do you like to
put the bag in the hole, baby?
Well, okay. Yeah. Well, obviously that's a strategy, bro. But I'm trying to get a sense of the type of cornhole player.
Yeah,
you are.
Yeah.
So do you flatten the bag? Like
that's the only way you do it.
Really?
Yeah. You have to. Well, in the air, you have to. You have to flatten the bag out.
You don't
tumble it over.
Right.
You know, you see the guy.
Not.
Yeah, you got to throw. You got to spin that baby.
So you just straight palm it? Or
it's more like a side action, like a hip fire.
So flick it. You actually use the pro style kind of way?
Yeah, man. You should see it. If you guys ever want to come up to the North Bay, out in breweries out there, you know, I'm from Santa Rosa, one of the brew capitals of the world. Every place has got their cornhole board set up. It's the best, you know, drinking summertime game. And it's kind of made a little money yesterday, too.
I pinched the side of the bag
oh,
and then
don't
I just
do that,
let
Steve.
All of it
all right,
go
you're not
down,
my partner.
Then tuck it and fold, hold with the thumb, and then boom.
September 7th, I'm playing in a 40-team tournament. The winner gets turnover chain Miami-style necklaces if they win.
Wow.
Yeah.
With like a big
big old chain on it, everything. Yeah, gigantic.
All right, we do have to move past this though, because Jennifer
Lee Chan all day.
Jennifer Lee Chan is on the line. She covers the 49ers for NBC Sports Bay Area. And Jennifer, we'll just bring you right into the conversation right now. Are you a good cornhole player if you've ever played?
Well, first of all, I didn't realize you could make money at it, so now I'm going to start honing my skills.
Yeah, we need to start training up, Jen. Come on.
Now I know.
But real quick, going forward for the 49ers, I saw you just wrote a piece about Richard Sherman. He talks about how the defense is light years ahead of last season. I just wanted to get your overall take on the defense so far that you've observed in training camp.
I think what he really is talking about is their confidence level. And what's interesting is that even without Nick Bosa or Dee Ford on the field, they still got a ton of pressure on the Broncos during that first team practice on Friday. The Denver offense kind of bounced back a little bit on Saturday, but
DeForest Buckner has been a force to be reckoned with on the inside. So it's a good sign to see that even without those two guys on the outside, that they're still getting some pressure on the quarterback.
Jennifer, I want to know, what's the vibe been like in Denver specifically for the 49ers? This is their first time, you know, traveling as a team, staying away from the Bay Area and kind of doing all the P's and Q's of what they will be doing as, you know, an away team. Now you're going to get to see them in practice, obviously leading up into the game. But just what's the vibe of the team and how's this practice been? Super competitive? Any skirmishes, things like that? Any mix-ups? What's the vibe out in Denver like?
It's been, I think, a really positive experience for them. They're all staying in the same hotel for, you know, 5 nights, so they've kind of got some team bonding stuff going on. But the defense has been exceptionally more energetic on the field. So you've got the 49ers defense and the Denver offense on one field, then you've got the 49ers offense and the Denver defense on the other field. So the field with the 49ers defense has been much more loud, much more boisterous, and that is the side that had the little skirmish on Saturday. It kind of happened, I believe it was DeForest Buckner laid out somebody on kind of on the sidelines, and then some of the Denver offense was not too, they weren't too pleased with that. The next play, there was another tackle for a loss. They kind of got underneath the Broncos' skin, and then the next play after that, I believe Marcel Harris kind of got a cheap shot, went flying across the field, and that's when tempers kind of flared, and it took a good 30 seconds for them to separate everybody. Two of the Broncos players were ejected from practice, and then none of the 49ers were. So I think maybe the lesson that Jalen Hurd got kind of mid-season where, or, you know, mid-training camp where, you know, it's, you want to get underneath their skin, but you don't want to be the one to pull the first punch. So a good sign for the fact that no Niners players were taken out of practice. So that was good.
Keeping it with practice over there in Denver, obviously we got the news on Friday that guard Mike Person was watching practice on crutches and in a walking boot. Can you give us an update on him and whether we could actually see him tomorrow night?
You won't see him tomorrow night, but it is good news as opposed to bad news with most of these injuries, except for Sean Coleman's injury, which has obviously put him on IR. Everybody's injury looks to be short-term, hopefully getting them back by week one, and if not, by week two or week three. He has a foot strain, so there's nothing broken per se in his foot, which is a good sign because that offensive line is just, you know, that's the one position where they need a little bit more depth at, and you lose Sean Coleman, who's your swing tackle, during training camp, and I think there's a lack of depth in the offensive line across the league, really. You've got a couple other guys that have gone down, and there's just really no replacements for them out there.
Jennifer, what's the wide receiver battle been looking like out in Denver? You know, watching practice out in Santa Clara, that was kind of one of the things to watch leading up until right now, and now they've got to go against guys like Chris Harris and even Kareem Jackson, a veteran like that. Bryce Callahan's a talented corner, getting to go against somebody different than the 49ers. Has anybody really stood out? I saw some stuff about Marquise Goodwin specifically looking pretty good against Chris Harris. Has that been the what you've seen out there in Denver?
Yeah, that matchup has been really interesting to watch, but also what's, I think, stood out more, I mean, because you kind of expect that out of a veteran, out of Marquise Goodwin, to, like, you know, be able to handle someone like Chris Harris. But watching Deebo Samuel and Jalen Hurd go against, you know, the Denver defense has been really interesting. Those guys have been catching contested passes in the middle of the field. Hurd does not take, you know, anyone lightly out there. He will put his full body weight into you and really kind of mow someone over. So those two have really kind of stood out as, you know, guys who have done well while still learning the offense, because everybody that's talked about their first year in Shanahan's offense, like George Kittle and Trent Taylor, said their first year was just trying to, you know, remember where they were supposed to go during a play. Dante Pettis had kind of a little bit of a rough Friday practice, bounced back a little bit more Saturday, and also caught a few contested passes across the middle. So that's kind of someone I think they're really hoping kind of steps up to the plate, takes the challenge, and kind of moves forward. He could be someone who really could, you know, be a game changer once the regular season starts. But they're really, you know, hoping that he kind of, you know, he's kind of not one of those. He definitely has a different mentality than Jalen and Deebo. So they really want him to kind of step up, and hopefully having those two guys in the same position group as him kind of, you know, gets him fired up and gets him a little bit more tough across the middle.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station, as we are joined by Jennifer Lee Chan, who covers the 49ers for NBC Sports Bay Area on the Dialpad guest line. And Jennifer, I want to know what your opinion of Jimmy Garoppolo has been with his practices in Denver. What's his composure been like since coming off that injury and going against that formidable defensive line in the Broncos?
He's done pretty well. I mean, I think it was kind of, you know, maybe a good thing that he threw five picks in a row on Wednesday before they left for Denver. So he kind of had that bad practice that he kind of get that out of his system. He's practiced well. The unfortunate part about the practices in Denver is that we're set up on the ground in the end zone. We're not allowed to be on the sidelines much. So the offense was kind of practicing away from us. We didn't get to see as much as we'd like to. But he had maybe an almost pick. It went off a DB's hands. But generally, he's been pretty on target. They haven't run up, you know, anything crazy. I think, you know, with when you look at the preseason, they kind of run a more vanilla type offense. They have done a couple end arounds, but generally, they're not doing any, you know, anything crazy or tricky. They're just trying to kind of build chemistry, and he seems to have done that. His mobility looks great. He looks healthy. I hope John Lynch didn't jinx it by saying that his rehab has been flawless, no setbacks. So that's kind of one of the things that they have really been happy with him. So I think it's, you know, it all looks positive as of right now.
So what's the plan for Jimmy G tomorrow? Is you know, do you have any expectations of how long he'll play? Has Shanahan or Lynch or even Jimmy said anything about the plan specifically for tomorrow night? What are you looking for in Jimmy Garoppolo in the second preseason game?
I think if they get a good drive going, they'll let him go to the end of the drive. If they go three and out, he may go in for a second series. We're not going to see a lot of him. So I think that's kind of the plan. Obviously, if he's, you know, I would say 10 snaps or less. If he's down to, you know, 8 or 9 snaps and he's working his way down the field, they'll let him go till the end of the drive. But I think they're really just going to take it, you know, be careful with the ones just because of all the injury rates they've had, you know, up the past 2 years and still, you know, as they're going into week one, they've got a lot of guys that are not going to be able to play just because of injury. So I think they really want to save everybody, make sure everybody's healthy 100% for week one. And if not one, week two.
Jennifer Lee Chan of NBC Sports Bay Area is joining Stephen Langford and Tommy Call right now. And I'm curious, Jennifer, how did fourth rounder, the new punter, Mitch Wisnowski look over there in Denver with the altitude?
Well, you know, he definitely got a little bit more hang time. He he's got such a great repertoire of kicks in his kind of in his bag of tricks. And, you know, yeah, the air being thinner, being at altitude gave him a little bit more. But, I mean, we're kind of, I mean, not used to it, but, I mean, it's still, you know, about 5 seconds, maybe even longer for hang time. He's got great placement. I'm excited to see what he can do tomorrow in the game. So it'll be, you know, where we have a great view of everything. We can see where exactly the placement is. But, I mean, everybody that has spoken about receiving his punts has talked about how difficult it is to come down with them and not muff. So that's kind of one of the fun things to watch. And he'll be playing the entire game, so that'll be fun.
The voice you hear is Jennifer Lee Chan, who covers the 49ers for NBC Sports Bay Area. You can follow her on Twitter at Jennifer Lee Chan. Thank you for joining us today, Jennifer.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks, Jennifer.
I mean, Mitch Wisnowski, man. I know a punter is not much to look forward to. I understand that. And drafting a punter in the fourth round isn't exactly sexy. But when I read that he was doing he was in an academy of some sort for Australian guys who have been playing with Australian football rules, and they're saying that he could be like the Seahawks punter who also was within that same academy and who ended up being an all pro in his first year coming back. I'm stoked for Mitch Wisnowski, man.
I'm
big
sorry.
Wisnowski.
Man, I just like this is a subject with the 49ers that does irk me. That I can't agree with you on. It's just look at what we're talking about with the 49ers. What have we talked about for the last couple hours? Injuries, depth, all these different things. Who is going to step up? Jennifer just talked about, look around the offense, look around the league. There's not a lot of offensive line players out there. We're talking about this offensive line being trash in front of Jimmy Garoppolo, who's coming off this injury, and that right there, a fourth round pick, you could have used on depth for an offensive lineman, a developmental guy, maybe a guy who could start. I have a list of some players who they drafted, you know, who they could have drafted. You take back-to-back wide receivers and a punter, and now you're stuck in this situation. I mean, it's fun, and it's nice to talk about Mitch Wishnowsky.
It is fun.
It's going to be – anytime he booms a punt, you're going to see the Twitter line blow up, the text line here blow up with people saying, oh, I told you drafting a punter was good. No.
That's going to be me.
I know. I can't wait. I can't wait to you know, kind of troll you on this, because I don't know how they didn't at least look for – a corner where there's still holes on this team for a young guy to develop. Well, I guess they have Akilah Witherspoon who they're going to try to develop. But still, players like that on the offensive line, think about it. If Joe Staley retires after next season, what does that offensive line look like without Mike McGlinchey?
Right.
You know, it's bleak. And now they're sitting in this position now where there's issues, man. And it's a lot. And I'm not blaming it all on Mitch Wishnowsky, but I just...
You think, man...
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.